I'm all right,
he said, shining his light around where he'd come to rest.
We're getting close.
She rappelled down the cable and slid down behind him.
Close? How can you tell? It's hard to see anything.
I can tell,
Kanan said. He pointed his light to illuminate a battered head sticking out from the ceiling.
Oh,
she said.
Yeah.
It was Yelkin. His body was crushed, embedded in the new strata of the moon. Kanan could tell the sight chilled Hera. It didn't do him much good either. But as the opening started to go more horizontal, they saw more corpses, dropped like sticks this way and that amid the broken crystal columns. It was like tunneling into a graveyard. Kanan recognized a uniform next, and then a hover cart, like the one he used daily. He was in the right place.
Kanan!
Hera called. Crawling over a mound of debris, he found her kneeling beside a half-buried equipment console.
That's your distress beacon,
she said, looking around.
But I don't see...
Okadaya!
Kanan leapt over jutting obstacles in the dark, hurrying to a spot up ahead. It was an elevator car, diagonal but still held in shape by the frame of its one-time shaft. Okadaya was under it. Kanan shone his light on the old man's face. Okadaya's skin was blue. His eyes and lips were covered with frost. The volume of air in the underground network was vast relative to the new vents to space, and further collapses had closed those portals off. But pressure had dropped considerably, and the air that remained was frigid. Kanan whipped his pouch open and removed an oxygen mask, carefully wrapping it around the miner's head. He was relieved to hear the old man cough.
Kanan, don't move,
Kanan said.
That's a joke. Not funny.
Kanan pulled the thermowrap from his bag and covered Okadaya's chest and shoulders. Then he looked to the old man's legs. They had been crushed beneath the elevator car, but not fully pinned.
Hang on!
Kanan turned and looked for something to use for leverage. Hera was right there, gripping a tough-looking stalactite. Kanan took it from her and inserted it beneath the side of the car.
You pull him out,
he said to Hera.
And heaved!
The mass, already lopsided, gave way in the opposite direction, tilting backward enough for Hera to slide the old man free.
Kanan collapsed, panting on the ground next to Okadaya.
Okadaya struggled to say something.
Stormtroopers.
What?
Stormtroopers came in, hoarded us out of Zone 66, had their own charges.
Kanan exhaled.
I knew it.
Feeling strength returning to his muscles, he got to his knees.
We're going to get you out of here. Too late,
Okadaya said. Kanan looked back at Hera. She was looking away, off into the darkness, respectfully.
Come here,
Okadaya mumbled.
Where I can see you.
Kanan cradled the old man's battered frame in his arms.
What is it, Okadaya?
Not you,
Okadaya said, before coughing.
The pretty one.
Hera stepped to the other side of Kanan and knelt.
I'm here.
Ah,
he said, smiling as if laying eyes on her were medicine enough.
You listen. This boy is good to have around.
Okadaya coughed again, this time much more violently.
You ought to stick by him. Think he needs...
Okadaya stopped talking. and closed his eyes. The inside of the transparent oxygen mask, once fogged, went clear.
No.
Kanan reached for the man's chest, certain he needed to do something, but unsure of what. He knew conventional first aid, but Okadiah's injury seemed past that. He felt useless, as useless as he had when Master Balaba had died. And the turmoil of that moment, mixed with this one, clouded his concentration. He struggled to focus, only to feel the gentle touch of Hera's hand on his arm. She shook her head.
He's gone, Kanan. I tried. You did,
she said, her touch turning into a firm grip.
We need to leave now.
Kanan looked back at her and shook his head.
No, not without him.
Chapter 36.
It's a triumph,
Count Vidian declared.
A triumph, pure and simple.
He strode onto the bridge, holding a data pad high. He didn't need it, but not everyone had his eyes.
It's the report from my lead researcher,
he said, approaching Captain Sloan.
97% of thoralide molecules in the effluent remained intact. Only a small portion broke down.
I don't recognize the name, Sloan said, pointing to the lead researcher. Lemuel Tharsa? He's aboard?
Part of my team. He boarded with me.
Vidian glared impatiently, bothered to have had his good news interrupted.
You'll find him checked in on your ship's manifest. What difference does it make? The important thing is what he says.
Sloan read from the report. The moon cinder may be effectively pulverized using deep bore charges, yielding an amount of ready thoralide equating to what could be mined in 2,000 years using conventional methods. She looked up in disbelief. 2,000 years?
Imagine the Emperor's response.
We'll have increased efficiency, all right. Vidian looked past her to the sky outside Ultimatum.
What's the status of the mining cargo fleets?
We've ordered every empty vessel to hold position, awaiting your next command, she said, handing off the data pad to an aide. 270 ships, counting thoralide carriers and explosive haulers.
We'll need them all, and all the ones on Gorse. We'll be bringing back thousands of metric tons of Baradium-357 from Calcoron Depot. We can retrofit the thoralide carriers for use there.
Sloan stepped over to examine a monitor. There also appears to be at least one intact explosives freighter remaining on Cinder.
Hardy!
Or foolhardy. Our sensors showed it going to the moon even after the explosion. Someone was determined to deliver his payload.
Sloan studied the screen in more detail, before looking up with concern.
We count 36 vessels destroyed in Cinder's main hangar, both personnel carriers and cargo ships. All attendant personnel presumably lost.
Acceptable. If we'd alerted the miners to our plans, you'd have seen true unrest. There'd be dozens like that bomber.
One was plenty, Sloan said, straightening. But won't people on Gorse wonder what happened?
Vidian began walking back to the elevator, accompanied by Sloan.
I've prepared an alert for broadcast, calling the event a comet strike. That explanation alone accounts both for why the workers were caught unawares and for Cinder's ultimate fate.
Efficient.
We won't need miners anyway, when our plan works.
The captain's dark eyebrows shot up.
Our plan?
This could be big for you, Sloan,
Vidian said, standing in the lift doorway.
I'll send up final instructions shortly.
We're ready, my lord.
Vidian nodded, stepped back, and watched as the door closed in front of him. He could no longer smile, but he felt it. It was a triumph, but not pure and simple. He hadn't told Sloane everything. Certainly, destroying the moon would help him meet the Emperor's goal now, but later was another story. That little inconvenient distinction had been revealed to him in the past hour, and he had shared it with no one. He'd expected such an eventuality, however, and he had a means of dealing with it. It would get him past this crisis, and then he would lay a trap that Baron Danth could never escape. Vidian knew something Danth didn't. A secret that would solve all his problems. In one stroke, he would keep the Emperor's favor and eliminate his main rival once and for all. Efficient, as always. Together with Hera, Kanan had managed to move Okadiah's body back up the long and twisted route to the still pressurized auxiliary bay. There, after removing their environment suits, they'd found Skelly and Zaluna outside the ship. Skelly was lying on his back, looking up at the lights, as Zaluna wandered as if in a daze, marveling at the kaleidoscopic effects.
"I watched the place on the cams for years," she'd said. "But I never imagined anything could be so beautiful."
Kanan had considered taking Okadiah's body back to Gors for burial. But on reflection, Cinda seemed a much more fitting resting place for his friend. He and Hera found a side grotto where they laid the body down and covered it with rocks. With the damage to the complex, Kanan couldn't imagine anyone mining the moon again. Not in the normal way. That meant the Empire had gone all in on the moon-shattering scheme.
"You're blinking!"
Skelly said, looking up at Kanan. Kanan noticed the flashing light on the device on his belt.
"Call coming in."
It was strange to see now, of all times.
"It's my moon glow pager."
He activated it, and Vidian's voice echoed through the massive chamber.
"Attention, all traffic associated with the Mining Guild. All empty mining cargo ships on Gors or in orbit are instructed to follow ultimatum to the Calcaron system. All offship pilots on Gors are ordered to report and fly whatever vessels are available."
Skelly sat up. He gawked, trying to calculate.
"That's gotta be 1,000 ships!"
The transmission continued. Only now it was Sloane speaking.
"This alert is for Gors Space Traffic Control. No other traffic of any kind is allowed to depart Gors until further notice. The space lanes must be kept clear until our return. We're leaving a tide patrol to enforce the restriction."
The message ended.
"No one can leave Gors?"
Zaluna asked, fretful.
"And if we go back, we're stuck,"
Skelly said.
"So much for warning people."
"What is this about?" Kanan asked. "What's Calcaron?"
Kneeling near the exit to the landing bay, Hera looked through the magnetic shield and out to space.
"It's Vidian's base of operations. A nerve center. A supply hub for the Empire in this sector."
Skelly snapped his fingers.
357.
Kanan blinked.
"What? Baradium 357?
"It's in my research," the bomber said. "I ran the numbers on the worst case and what it would take to blow the moon apart. Plain old baradium bisulfate can't do it. Not even 1,000 ships full. But the isotope could. That's the evil stuff. Weapons grade."
"You're the expert," Kanan thought. "And they've got it there?"
"They invented it there,"
Hera said, walking over to join them. Zaluna spoke in a worried voice.
"So, what do we do?"
No one said anything. Kanan finally shrugged and gestured to expedient.
"We could do what they want us to do."
Hera turned to face him.
"Yeah?"
"That's an explosives hauler. I'm a pilot for one of the mining firms. You just heard my orders. We can't go anywhere else, more than likely. Not without a fight.
He put his hands before him, palms upward.
So, we go.
We follow Vidian?
Skelly's eyes narrowed.
What would we do?
Kanan glowered at him.
We're not blowing the place up, I'll tell you that.
But maybe,
Hera said.
Maybe we don't have to.
Kanan looked at the ship, considering the possibilities.
We can't decide to go without everyone's consent, Hera said. That's the Empire's way.
Kanan looked back at her in disbelief.
What, you want to vote? We can't exactly sit around in a circle debating all year.
Hera walked into the middle of the circle, addressing each of the three as she turned.
Listen, I think we all understand the stakes. At least I hope we do. You know the Empire needs to be stopped here. And you've also got individual reasons to care. But for us to have any chance of working together, we've got to be united. We've all got to see the same big picture.
Zelluna watched her.
Tell us.
I've been around to see it. All across the galaxy. This is an empire motivated by greed. That delivers injustice. That rules through fear. And that prospers through deceit.
Hera started counting on her fingers.
Greed, injustice, fear, deceit. You can see them here, can't you?
They've certainly got the greed part down,
Skelly said, looking up at the ceiling.
I can't believe what they've done. What they're going to do to this place. And for what?
He waved his good hand.
Whatever. I'm in. And I think if Gord Grolic had lived, he'd go with you on the injustice part.
Hera nodded. She turned to Zelluna next.
Do you want to go home, Zelluna? Because if you do, we all will. No one will judge you.
Zelluna didn't say anything for long moments. Finally, summoning the words, she spoke.
You know, I always liked to tell myself I was a brave person. But the fact is, I've been a coward,
she said, looking down.
The place I felt safest was in a place where I could watch over others. But it's changed. Peto, Skelly, they're far from the only ones. I've seen hundreds of people arrested, based on things I heard them say and do.
She shook her head.
And I never saw any of those people on the screens again. Nobody comes back.
The Empire doesn't keep watch in order to protect Zelluna. It keeps watch to scare.
I know. I've been the terror.
Eyes full of defiance, she looked over at Hera.
I don't want to make innocent people afraid anymore. And I won't let them do it either.
Hera smiled gently. Kanan knew Hera didn't want to show it, but he could tell she was immensely proud of Zelluna.
We won't have to hurt anyone, will we?
The woman asked.
Not if we can avoid it,
Hera said. Now she turned her eyes on Kanan.
And what about you, Kanan?
I lost track, Kanan said. What did you leave me with? Injustice?
Deceit,
Skelly offered.
Well, I think I've got that covered, Kanan said, gesturing. All those bodies down there? Nobody had to be here.
He was scratching his beard, deciding whether to offer anything else, when the next words came out anyway.
And they're not the only friends of mine that the Empire's deceived.
Hera studied him, perhaps deciding whether to ask him to elaborate. Instead, she smiled a little.
So, what do you suggest doing about it?
Something. Kanan paused. I don't know what, but somebody sucker-punched a friend. I won't let that pass.
Good enough.
Hera stood up straight and gestured to the ramp.
It's your ship, Captain.
You're the pilot.
And you're the tactician, she grinned. Let's see what you can do.
It was more than a risk, Hera thought. Going to an Imperial depot at this stage of her project bordered on madness. The Empire, as yet, hadn't identified her. Getting tagged now would be just as bad as getting caught. But what was happening to Gorse and Cinda was beyond serious. It was the sort of thing she vowed to stop someday. The day had just come early. Too early, before she'd assembled a capable team. Not exactly the new dawn she'd had in mind. Skelly would have been arrested if she'd left them behind on Gorse, she still believed. That could have put the Empire on her trail. But he wasn't revolutionary material. And Zaluna had resolve now, but she would be out of her depth soon. No, it was Kanan she wanted to see in action. She watched him from the pilot's seat as he punched hyperspace coordinates into the nav computer. He seemed different to her now. Not obsessed, as Skelly seemed, but focused, directed. She'd seen him act that way in short bursts when heroism was required. Now it was a sustained effort. It was clear that what had happened on Cinda had affected him deeply. She hadn't lied, either. She did want to see what he could do. But she was more interested in seeing what he would do.
Phase 3. Detonation.
Count Vidian leading Mining Guild in heroic effort to stabilize Moon.
Blast investigators turn eyes to mining firms.
Tourism industry watchers suggest busy season for travel ahead.
Headlines. Imperial Hollow News. Gorse Edition.
Chapter 37.
A child's snow globe filled with blood. That was how one of the first visitors to behold Kalkaron had described the world. It was a wonder anyone had ever returned, given that description. And Ray Sloane agreed. Looking out from Ultimatum's bridge, she saw a planet that heaved and churned crimson, the result of a planet-wide ocean thick with chromal chloride. There wasn't anything living down there. Not on a sea where a drop of water could unleash not one, but two potent acids. But both the liquid and ocean floor beneath it held uses for starship manufacturing, and so Kalkaron Depot had been constructed in orbit to service the many robotic factories already in space. It was just another bizarre stop on what had, for Sloane, become a tour of the galaxy's strangest planets. The Empire tended to like these punishing environments, she thought, like an extremophile bacterium in a volcanic rift. It made sense to her, philosophically. True power could only be claimed by those brave enough to go and get it. And Gorse could soon become another hellish place, losing what little livability it had. Kalkaron Depot was Vidian's design and domain, and the thing seemed an architectural expression of his philosophies. The vast polyhedral hub of the depot sat like the biggest atom in an extensive molecule, connected to all the orbital factories by a triangular lattice grid of passageways. New supplies kept moving through those tubes to the hub and its main warehouse, or directly to departing vessels for snap delivery. The hub's central position also gave its occupants a view of everything around, including the approaching flotilla of cargo ships from Gorse.
"Keep moving, destroy barriers, see everything,"
was fully at work in Vidian's station. Sloane could see Vidian's minions fully at work, too, on a curious giant of a spacecraft at the far end of the sprawling complex. Vidian was over there now, overseeing final preparations and calling every 30 seconds to inquire as to when the rest of the cargo fleet would arrive from Gorse. It was a ship like none Sloane had ever seen. Seven bulging black spheres connected on a long axis. It looked like a segmented insect. But where a bug might have had legs, The vessel instead had long antenna-like structures running from the frontmost pod backward the entire length of the vessel.
Forager,
the science officer said excitedly.
That's a real beauty.
The captain nodded. Lieutenant Deltic got on her nerves. But Sloan had ordered her here anyway. She felt she needed to understand the process she was being asked to protect.
What are those things along the spine? Electrostatic towers. 16 of them.
The lieutenant fidgeted with the pins on a hat gone lopsided.
They'll fan outward when it's in operation to become the spokes for the collection wheel. I saw a ship like that in action once. It just plows through the debris field, snapping up all the goodies.
The goodies?
Sloan shook her head.
I don't think I can handle all this technical jargon.
The thorolide molecules. They're drawn to the spokes and shunted inside the vessel. There are automated processing centers in each of those big pods, taking the place of much of what the refineries on Gorse would have done. Just above the thrusters, that tail-end pod has the landing bays for shipping the stuff out. They'll churn out more pure thorolide in an hour than the miners did in a month.
Sloan nodded. The vessel was heavily shielded, as anything that barged into asteroid fields and comet tails needed to be. The turbolaser cannons on the outside of each pod and on the forward command hub probably also cut down on damage from errant debris. Once Forager was in place, Gorse would have its own Calcaron depot for as long as the thorolide lasted, which seemed to be forever. The lieutenant was dizzy with her math again.
Even if 90% of the debris were to strike the planet, that machine could supply 100 empires the size of ours for a century. There is only one empire,
Sloan said sternly. Then she looked at the lieutenant.
90% of the debris falling. Is that possible?
The younger woman shrugged.
I told you. Might be a drop, might be a deluge.
She grinned.
We have a betting pool going on down in Planetary Sciences. If something takes out the World Watch Plaza building in Gorse City in this calendar year, I'm taking my shore leave on Alderaan.
Dismissed,
Sloan said.
Out the airlock,
she wanted to add. Still, she'd found out what she wanted to know. It was amazing. Seeing up close the work involved to source and service just one component of the Imperial arsenal. And this was just one of countless facilities. How many other projects were out there similar to what Bidian had in mind? How many had he run? And how many was he running personally? Playing bodyguard to an efficiency expert hadn't interested Sloan in the beginning. But now she saw clearly that her mission was, in large part, about the basic business of the Empire. To keep going. To keep growing. It all suggested to her that Bidian, in his eccentric way, was as vital to the Emperor as Lord Vader. And that escorting Bidian was easily more important than chasing down pirates on the Outer Rim. Things had to be built. All interstellar empires rose and fell, ultimately, on their ability to deliver on this one simple, unexciting thing. Logistics. Her military history studies had told her of the war forges of the ancient past. She didn't doubt that Bidian had studied them, too. He could well be the great armorer of future legend. And she, his preferred deputy. It was just still a little surprising to her that an entire planetary population might wind up between Hammer and Anvil, even as motley a group of specimens as lived on Gorse. The workers on her homeworld, so much closer to the Galactic Center, were much better behaved. Commander Tomas approached the door to a ready room.
I see that Lieutenant Strangechild has left you in peace. Sloan rolled her eyes.
You want something?
You have a call, her first officer said. I think you want to take it. A very important person.
Vidian again?
Jamar smirked.
A different important person.
She had seen him once at the commencement ceremonies at the academy. He'd stood on the stage and shaken some hands. Not hers, but she could hardly forget him. Baron Lero Danth spent more on a suit than her family spent on its house on Ganthal.
My lord, she said, to what do I owe the honor?
You and your crew do the honor by your service, the young man said, bowing. I heard about the attempts on Count Vidian's life. I was calling to thank you for protecting him.
Most generous.
Extremely so, considering the bad blood she'd heard to exist between Vidian and his subordinate in the administration.
They haven't made the saboteur who can foil the Empire.
The golden-haired man smiled.
Very glad you're on our team.
She liked hearing it. They were separated by title and fortune, but she and Danth represented the New Imperials, the media's catchphrase for the first generation of people to ascend to adulthood under the Empire. With few exceptions, her naval superiors were part of a class that had struggled to reach the top, only to see all the rules change. Now they were spending every waking moment trying to keep pace. Perhaps not Vidian, she thought. But it was tiring dealing with them all. The Empire would be a better place once people her and Danth's age were in charge. But in the military, as in government, the time of apprenticeship had to be respected. She knew Danth was already fabulously wealthy, having inherited control of a firm manufacturing heavy-duty droids for use on fiery worlds like Mustafar. But Vidian's holdings were wider, his name already established. And given the cyborg's health, she couldn't imagine him handing off power for decades to come. Not that the young man wasn't eager.
The Count hasn't had time to fill me in on this special project of his involving Cinta. How would you say it's faring?
I couldn't judge, my lord. I'm simply the escort.
Danth frowned ever so slightly before brightening.
Well, I'm sure you will do well in that. I want you to know, Captain, if you ever have the smallest need, please contact me immediately. My people will put you through directly.
I thank you, my lord.
The transmission ended.
Vidian, now Danth. Were all interim captains this popular with the elite?
Chapter 38.
Through his own reflection on the passenger seat window, Kanan beheld the whole of Calcaron Depot. He'd seen other such sights in his travels, enormous examples of Imperial ingenuity and excess. They seemed to get bigger every year. But his focus was on his reflection, and the question he now asked himself.
Caleb, what are you doing?
He hadn't gone by that name in years, and he didn't consider it relevant to the person he was now. Yet whenever Kanan stuck his neck out further than was comfortable, Caleb Doom was usually the culprit. Caleb, the little Jedi cut off before his date with destiny, his career as a galaxy-saving superhero stunted. He couldn't believe now that he'd ever been that person. That kid didn't know what real life, or real fun, was like. That boy was a nobody. I never was. An unwelcome squatter in the back of his gray matter. Whenever Kanan had an idea that Caleb Doom would have agreed with, it was usually better to stay inside and order a double. As much as the Emperor, Caleb was responsible for making Kanan's early adolescence miserable with his constant regrets. Caleb was all counterfactuals and what-ifs, all mental replays of the deaths of Depa Balaba and the other Jedi. always looking for some way disaster could have been averted. It was just as well that he was avoiding other people then, because it had made the young fugitive unbearably morose. While the other teenagers in the hangouts he'd tried to blend into were thinking about pod racing, he was off in the corner, trying to figure out how Jedi Master Ki-Adi Mundi could have better protected himself on Mygeeto, or Master Plo Koon on Cato Nymoidia. Every name he'd found out about in those days had just set the whole thing off again, making it impossible for him to forget. A waste of time. Except for one thing. All that thinking and hiding in those early days had trained him to analyze situations quickly and thoroughly. The tactical smarts Hera seemed to like had sprung from there. In that case, he thought, there was one good thing that had come of it. Because looking at her in the pilot's chair now, he determined that he'd follow her anywhere. If he didn't get her killed first, or if she didn't do the same to him. Hera was chipper as she braked expedient.
"Told you we'd catch up,"
she said as the ship neared the tail of the freighter convoy. It had been open to question whether they would arrive at all. Expedient had left Cinda just as the straggler freighters were following Ultimatum into hyperspace. Kanan, who had never used the ship's hyperdrive before, had worried that it might not work at all. Ships on the Lunar Run were there for the very reason that their long-haul days were past. But the fact that none of the other ships was better off made them catchable for the right pilot. And Hera had talked nicely to Expedient, getting her way. She did that a lot. It had worked that way with him, too. He liked that Hera had direction and drive. All women were magical creatures to Kanan. But there were happy forest nymphs, and then there were wizards. There was so much more to Hera. And it might take days or weeks or years to find out what was motivating her. Time he had. But he wouldn't stick around long if it meant constantly letting Caleb Doom call the shots. Hera had seemed to sense that old dutiful instinct in him, and had gotten him to come this far by appealing to it. The problem was, that person was someone he'd never really been, and could never be again. Okadiah's death deserved an answer, yes, and Gorse needed to be protected if possible. But both were responsibilities of a kind he had avoided for years. He intended to keep avoiding them. Hera was clever and pretty, and he loved her voice. If the only way to keep hearing it, though, was to play at her cloak and dagger games, he might have to be on his way, with thanks for the memories.
"Okay, you're up," Hera said.
"Hmm?"
"I'm not the pilot of record,"
she said, sliding out of her seat. They were approaching the outer security perimeter, an invisible energy shield surrounding Calcaron Depot. TIE fighters circled the station, demarcating the location.
"Oh, right."
Kanan squeezed past her, a not unpleasant experience, to take his usual seat. Grabbing the control yoke, he slowed Expedient to a stop just short of the barrier indicated on his view screen. A gruff female voice came across the comm system.
"What's your identifier?"
"Moonglow 72, Kanan replied.
"Not anymore."
The response startled Kanan for a moment.
"What do you mean?"
He pushed a button.
"Here, I've switched on the ID transponder. You can see who I am. I'm from Moonglow."
"And I said not anymore. You're now Imperial Provisional 72. Name, license, and personnel."
"Kanan Jarrus. Guild license 54981.
He paused to look back.
"Passengers. 3 laborers."
"That's 2 more than you're supposed to carry."
"We'll get loaded up faster," Kanan said. "What do you care?"
"Not at all. Continue on your heading to landing station 77. Follow the lights and go slow."
Kanan did so.
Expedient cruised into one of the largest assortments of starships he'd ever come across. Every baby carrier he'd ever seen in the skies between Gorse and Cinda was here, and more from elsewhere. And yet, unlike on the Lunar Run, all the ships were moving in an orderly and precise fashion. He soon realized why, as Expedient shuddered, and he felt the control yoke go dead in his hands.
"Tractor beam parking attendants," Kanan said. "Nice. I hope we won't owe anyone a tip."
He sat back, a passenger again, like all the others. Hera watched as Expedient circled the facility.
"Are we going to have a problem getting back out?"
He shook his head.
"Doubt it. These beams are for traffic manipulation. This place is so well protected, they wouldn't need tractor beams rated to yank fleeing ships from the sky."
"That's a relief."
Kanan stood up to stretch his legs and thought back. There was one thing the controller had said that had disturbed him.
"Weird. They changed our call sign."
"By no way,"
Zeluna called. Kanan turned to see her on the chair across from Skelly. As soon as they'd left hyperspace, she'd gotten her datapad out and started looking for news on the public channels.
"They changed your name because there is no more Moonglow."
"What?"
"Moonglow has been blamed for the big blast on Cinda."
Across the aisle, Skelly gawked.
"That's not true."
Zeluna shook her head.
"It was a Moonglow team that found your first bomb, remember?"
Kanan rolled his eyes.
"I was there. Don't remind me."
"I was in the transept monitoring room when word went out on that,"
Zeluna said.
"They called it a natural occurrence, so nobody would get spooked about the mining company's practices."
"Or would see that a dissident existed,"
Hera put in.
"Right. Now they've totally changed that story, saying that the collapse earlier this week and the giant explosion were both Moonglow's doing. The company has been dissolved, with its assets placed under Imperial control."
"Nothing like stomping all over someone's good name after you've killed them,"
Kanan said. Lal Grolic had been nice to him. Count Vidian was starting to roll up some big numbers in the debt column. Expedient traced a long arc toward a massive disc-shaped landing station connected by huge spars to the rest of the facility. Several open ports revealed a sprawling loading area. The comm system came to life again as the vessel cruised into the landing bay.
"On landing, debark and begin loading product as it arrives on the conveyors. Take standard precautions. You're on our turf now."
"Great," Kanan said when the transmission ended. "Now I guess I work for the Empire."
He looked to Hera.
"What's the plan?"
"The plan is you do what they tell you,"
she said, standing up and checking her comlink.
"Load the ship and wait for my call."
Kanan's eyes widened.
"Wait, you're leaving?"
"That's right,"
she said, adjusting the blaster in her holster.
"I'm going to destroy the station."
Chapter 39.
Kanan nearly fell over Hera's feet trying to get between her and the door.
"Destroy the station?"
He couldn't believe his ears.
"I thought you were all about being careful and undercover. Now who's being the loose cannon?"
"I know what I'm doing." Hera looked directly up at him and explained, a little less patient than she had been until now.
"Cinda isn't just some little rock in the sky above Gorse, Kanan. I read up in the ship's gazetteer while you were sleeping. Zeluna was right. It's a rogue planet that entered the system and got captured. Massive enough, they might start revolving around each other in a million years if Cinda doesn't break up first." She pointed her thumb toward the aft of the ship. "But you saw how many starships are here. They're going back to break up the moon for sure. And not in a million years. They're doing it now. The people down below on Gorse are in danger now. So something has to be done now."
Kanan refused to budge.
"Here I thought I was the suicide flyer."
"I call it logic."
She crossed her arms and tapped her foot on the deck. Now, are you going to get out of my way or not?
Shaking his head, Kanan stepped away from the airlock door. She looked back at the others.
I'm sorry things worked out this way. If I don't make it back, you should try to warn people somehow. Then Kanan can take you someplace safe.
She paused.
Somewhere besides Gorse.
Kanan looked at Zelluna, who was clutching her bag tightly to her and shaking her head over the thought of losing her homeworld.
The Jedi used to take care of these things.
The remark startled Kanan. Jedi were a topic people weren't supposed to speak of.
What do you know about the Jedi, Zelluna?
More than that silly story the Empire put out about them.
She looked up wistfully.
I saw Jedi in action, you know, long before you were born. If innocent lives were threatened, they would figure out what to do, even in a no-win situation.
Hera nodded.
We could use one now.
Or maybe it's time for people to be their own Jedi.
Emboldened by the subject she was speaking on, Zelluna looked confidently from Hera to Kanan.
They weren't gods, just people, like us, who saw a need. If they could find a way, I'm sure we can.
Maybe, Kanan thought. And then it came to him.
Wait, he said, as he started to work the door handle. Let's say you somehow blow this whole monstrosity up. Are there other depots like this?
Hera looked back at him and nodded.
Not exactly like this, but there are stockpiles in every sector.
So if the Emperor thinks having a bunch of easy Thorlide is worth ruining the Gorse system already, wouldn't he just try it again?
I imagine so.
Then I don't get what you're trying to accomplish, Kanan said. You're the one that thinks futile gestures are stupid.
I'm buying time.
For what? Is it worth sacrificing yourself to delay the inevitable?
Hera shrugged.
I don't want to sacrifice myself, no. But you're describing a situation where we just sit back and let the Empire do whatever it wants.
No, there's another answer. It's not enough to prevent it now. We've got to make them never want to try it again.
Kanan's mind raced. Hera watched him, curious.
Go on.
He began talking, not yet sure where he was going.
Okay, look, the Empire didn't even have this fool idea until they got it from Skelly.
Fool that I am, Skelly interjected bitterly.
And then they tested it, back there with that big blast. But how did they know the test worked? That it didn't destroy the Thorlide it freed?
I saw probes searching the debris, Hera offered.
So did I, Kanan said.
He began pacing.
Vidian wouldn't just demolish a moon without the Emperor's say-so. He'd have to send a report.
He paused and snapped his fingers.
So we send another report. Or fix the one he's about to send.
Yeah, just let me at it, Skelly said, interested. I can throw cold water on the whole thing. I'll say crushing the moon will ruin what they're going after.
So we say the test didn't work.
Hera nodded.
It would cause confusion, maybe slow them down until we can warn people. But can we make it look legitimate?
No problem,
Zelluna volunteered.
Where would something like that be kept?
With Vidian, Kanan said.
He scratched the side of his head and looked at Zelluna.
Would you be able to find him using the station's surveillance?
Maybe,
she said. Then...
Yes. Just get me to a terminal I can slice.
Hera seemed pleased.
I like it better than blowing the place up. But this will be harder than me just sneaking around. Skelly's known, and we may be too for all we know.
Kanan nodded. Then something told him to turn around. Outside, a flash of color caught his eye.
Wait, he said, recognizing what it was. Look!
Hera and Skelly joined Kanan far forward and looked out onto the landing deck of the shipping node.
A dozen other freighters, baby carriers, and former Forlide haulers alike, were parked with their ramps down. Under the watchful eyes of ranks of stormtroopers, individuals short and tall descended from the vessels, all wearing head-to-toe coverings in fluorescent orange.
Hazmat suits, Hera observed.
We're here to load Beridian 357, all right, Kanan said. That's naughty, baby.
Supporting himself against the back of the passenger seat, Skelly nodded.
It's like we guessed. They need the big stuff to destroy the moon. I ran the numbers on it in my report. Wishing I hadn't.
Hera stared.
What are the suits for? Does it blow up if you breathe on it?
That's not the reason for them,
Skelly said, hobbling back to his seat.
The canisters have an outer shell full of toxic coolant. Nasty stuff if it leaks.
Will it kill you?
Maybe, but you'll kill a bunch of people first. It's psychoactive, produces irrational, violent impulses.
Kanan laughed. Check around your house for some, Skelly. It'd explain a lot.
Then something dawned on him. Kanan snapped his fingers and turned. Expedient's supply cabinet was between the forward compartment and the cargo area. Opening the door, he beheld his own supply of bright orange outfits, hanging neatly from a rack. Masks sat on the upper shelf.
I've seen these in here, but never used them.
Hera stood before the door and stared.
You've got your own wardrobe?
Kanan removed a suit.
That's Lal's thinking. We never knew what we'd be carrying from day to day, and she didn't want anyone getting hurt. The suits are meant to be thrown away, so they're cheap enough, and one size fits all. Or most, anyway.
Efficient, Kanan thought, though he decided against mentioning that Vidian would probably approve. He looked back to Skelly and Zaluna.
We'd need you both with us. It could be dangerous, and...
Tush,
Zaluna said, rising.
We know what's at stake.
Skelly rolled his eyes.
Let's go before my meds wear off, and I start thinking clearly.
Okay,
Hera said, pulling down the masks.
We try this your way. But if this doesn't work out, we go back to my plan.
Dying is never a plan, but you've got a deal.
Chapter 40.
It was the rare space station that a Star Destroyer could dock with. Among Calcaron Depot's many arms was a long astrobridge that mated to an airlock on Ultimatum's hull. Sloan figured Vidian had calculated some minuscule time savings in it. He had met her at the connecting point. Greeted was too strong a word, since as usual he seemed to be engaged in silent comlink communication with someone else. Given how many sites they passed, their ride in the tramcar from node to node felt like a tour. Only a tour in which the guide had almost nothing to say. They passed an arrival area in which heavily plated robots were being disassembled. She had never seen anything like them.
What are those?
Droids.
Of what sort?
Heat tolerant. The depot supplies projects across the sector. Not just Gorse.
She was anxious to show what she knew.
Heatproof. Baron Danth's firm made them, then? He holds the monopoly.
Vidian visibly bristled at the Baron's name.
Yes. Many firms supply the Empire, including his.
But those are employees of one of your firms taking them apart. She recognized the logos on the uniforms.
Standard maintenance.
Vidian accelerated the tramcar, indicating the subject was closed. They rode on past several more junctions, offering opportunities for more glimpses of the depot's shipments and more terse exchanges with Vidian. Sloan wondered if Vidian even remembered that he had asked her here.
It's an amazing place, she finally said. I appreciate the opportunity to see it.
You don't find the logistical world too tedious?
He asked as their car began to slow.
It's what makes the Empire go.
Agreed,
Vidian said. He pointed to a small cabinet in the car.
You'll want what's in there.
Sloan opened the compartment and withdrew a transparent face mask. Donning it, she saw a sign for Landing Station 77 up ahead. There were hazmat-suited workers all around the floor, taking meter-high cylindrical drums from pneumatic tubes and delivering them to freighters.
The explosives,
he said, gesturing.
Being loaded here and at several other nodes for return to Cinder. Testing has shown that organics will move explosives more quickly than droids will. Fear is a useful motivator.
Of course.
She looked at Vidian, maskless.
Don't you need...
My lungs have been augmented to reject poisons.
The car stopped, and Vidian stepped out onto the shipping floor. Sloan followed.
The explosives must be deposited deep within Cinder using shafts drilled at precise locations.
He paused and looked at her.
My prep teams are already en route to the moon, but your military engineers could help speed things along.
Now we're to it, Sloan thought.
Of course. They're at your disposal.
Fine.
A red-clad human stepped forward to Vidian, offering him a data pad. The Count passed it to Sloan.
Convey these instructions to your crew.
As a pair of workers passed carrying drums, another tram car arrived from a different direction. Vidian gestured toward the loading floor.
I must finalize my report for the Emperor. Stay and educate yourself.
He walked toward the vehicle. Then he paused and looked back at her.
It's good to have an ally in the military who understands what I'm doing.
It was the closest thing to warmth she'd seen from him. She bowed her head.
Your lordship commands.
That's our boy,
Kanan mumbled as he set a canister on the deck of the loading floor. Hera nodded, anonymous in her orange getup, but for the big bumps on the loose-fitting head covering where it protected her headtails.
He hasn't sent the report yet,
she said, her lovely voice muffled by the mask.
More luck that he'd drop by here.
If you can call it that.
Skelly!
Hera called out. Kanan pivoted to see the hooded Skelly limping through the crowd of busy workers toward Vidian. Worse, he was carrying his pouch of explosives. His blood running cold, Kanan picked up the Baradium canister and started walking quickly in that direction. Skelly was a dozen meters away from Bidian's back and reaching for his bag when Kanan interposed himself. He shoved the canister into Skelly's hands.
Here you go, buddy. Back to the ship.
Skelly, his expression invisible through the opaque faceplate, seemed poised to keep on going.
Don't you see?
Vidian? You bet,
Kanan wanted to say. Instead, he twirled Skelly around. He nodded to one of the stormtroopers standing guard.
Sorry, big place. Easy to get turned around.
Skelly resisted as Kanan pulled him away from the tram line. Vidian was in the car already, seemingly none the wiser.
Skelly, have you lost your mind? But he's right there, Kanan!
Not now.
Kanan pulled him back across to where Expedient was parked.
You want to blow us all up?
It's him or us.
That'd be him and us,
Hera said, stepping over. She shook the canister from Skelly's hands while Kanan pulled the bag off his shoulder.
Watch him,
Kanan said, turning to Expedient's ramp.
I'm putting this where he can't get it.
Kanan shook his head as he locked the sack of bombs away. Time had only seemed to magnify the injuries Skelly had suffered at Vidian's hands. It was getting harder to get the guy to see reason through his pain. As he disembarked, Kanan saw that Hera had stationed Skelly by the ramp with a datapad, pretending to take inventory. That was the best place for him right now. Zaluna approached carrying a canister as gingerly as she might carry an infant.
Will they blow up if you drop them?
Just a little,
Skelly said.
He's kidding,
Kanan said.
But if you do, make sure that hood is secure.
He didn't want to imagine Zaluna on a chemically induced killing spree. Minutes later, Hera returned from a nonchalant walkabout of the loading floor.
Okay, Bidian's gone to the hub,
she said.